You are listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast, the number one wellness podcast designed to provide the latest information to help you achieve your health and wellness goals. Our show features exciting guests, the latest in medical research, and in-depth discussions in current trends on weight loss, nutrition, and fitness. No matter what your interest, the Health and Wellness Podcast has you covered. And now, presenting your illustrious host, Dr. Barry, MD. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Health and Wellness Connection. It's your host, Dr. Barry here, and I want to thank you for joining us and returning back to the show that we feel is one of the best sources of health wellness news out there in the interwebs. First off, I want to just apologize for the long hiatus from the previous show. We went through some transitions here over at Health and Wellness Connection. We got new studios, kind of a new company, a new setup, actually. And we have a whole list of different shows and features we're going to bring to you guys. We're going to restart the podcast, which is what we're doing with this show. And we have some other exciting developments, including a YouTube show that's going to be coming up in the very near future. But in the meantime, we're going to do some awesome health and wellness news. It's going to tell you about some of the things that we felt that has come across our desk and we feel should be definitely spread and just kind of let people know what's going on out there, because again, there's a lot going on in the world today, and it's something that we need to kind of start understanding how it affects our health and wellness. So without any further ado, let us proceed. So when we left off the last series of shows, one of the big things that was in the news, and it's still in the news, is gun violence. Now, of course, gun violence is something that in America specifically has been an issue that has really been plaguing the country. Every day there seems to be some sort of shooting event, gun violence, murder, things like that. And then, of course, we have these mass shootings that have really taken over the overall information landscape over the past few months, and really has not even let up. But during the summertime is when the shootings get more frequent and more tragic. If we can all recall, recently there was a significant shooting in Buffalo, New York, where a suspected white supremacist gentleman targeted a grocery store that was frequented by African-American individuals, resulting in the deaths of 10 people. He's in custody. There was another shooting actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This was a result of a disgruntled patient who went at a physician who treated him, and he felt he didn't do a good job, so he decided to shoot the physician as well as some of the staff there. About three or four people were killed in that incident. Another five or six, I think, were injured. But again, this shows the level of violence that we have in our country now, where people who get upset for whatever reason take guns and go at people who they feel have aggrieved them. Another disturbing incident happened in Uvalde, Texas, actually not too far from where we are broadcasting down here in Houston, where a troubled young individual took a long gun into a school and actually killed, was it up to 19 people? Just very tragic and sad situation here in the Uvalde mass shooting incident. And there were some concerns about the police not being as quick to stop the shooting. In fact, barricading the shooter in the room with the kids who were slaughtered. And it just, you know, showed a lot of concern regarding, you have incidents now where even the police are intimidated due to the level of weaponry that some of these disturbed people are getting access to and using to commit, you know, these heinous crimes. So as a result, there have been a lot of people weighing in, and of course the politicians have said they're going to try to do something about mass shootings via legislation. I don't think it's that simple, but you know, definitely can, I think, make it a little bit more difficult for these guns to be accessible. Now of course that has a lot of issues on all the different political sides, and it has made it almost turned into another political football situation. And unfortunately, this is usually how these things turn out. Whenever something tragic happens, it goes straight to politics, and usually very little is achieved. But that being said, some of the people who are most, you know, actually saddled with the responsibility of treating these victims, these are people that don't really get enough credit in our society. and those are the trauma surgeons. Now, as a physician myself, you know, I know many prominent trauma surgeons, and they're doing their best to kind of stay sane in this, you know, environment of mass shootings. Imagine if you're at a job and you have to deal with, you know, kids being killed and trying to save them, and old people being kind of just shot up for no reason. You have to actually deal with the family, deal with the patients, try to bring these people back to health. You know, people just see people get shot up on their TV screens and then they just move on. Meanwhile, these trauma surgeons are dealing with these actual patients on a day-to-day basis, and it's actually affecting them psychologically. And because of this, many of them are speaking out saying that we need to do more to protect the people, literally, because unfortunately, shootings have become now a health issue, as many people are being killed indiscriminately as a result of these mass shootings. And the health system has now had to figure out ways to deal with those ramifications. So because of those changes, many surgeons, especially those who represent the American College of Surgeons, are speaking out saying that more needs to be done to try and somehow reduce the prevalence of these long guns specifically they're worried about, because they feel that they just do too much damage in such a quick amount of time, making its victims almost impossible to save. People who are victimized by handguns, they argue, typically are easier to save because there's less damage, you know, increase the likelihood that they will be able to actually save the life of someone who has been shot, versus those who are, you know, shot with AR-15s or other high-powered automatic weapons. These patients are almost gone before they can get to them, resulting in more death, more carnage, and just kind of overall poor outcomes. Now, of course, many would argue that the purpose of those guns is to do more damage, but many argue what the purpose of having such high-powered rifles would be, especially in a society that is organized with actual services designed to protect individuals when they do have the need for such, weaponry, if you would. Now, the main areas that the American College of Surgeons is focused on: gun ownership, firearm registration, licensure, education and training, making sure people who have these guns understand the responsibilities that they come with, and just kind of making sure people are more responsible with those owning guns. Now, they're not calling for the outright ban of AR-15s and other weapons of considered long guns, but they are specifically stating that they need to be restricted and regulated and made so that it's a little more difficult to get access to said weaponry. That being said, you know, these surgeons who are out here doing what I would consider the Lord's work, saving these people who are really been victimized and trying to restore some sort of normalcy back to their lives, hopefully will be listened to. Of course, many people are weighing in on this gun violence issue and the best ways to deal with it to try to reduce some of the issues we're seeing out here. And hopefully these people will be listened to. I do think they have a lot of great suggestions, you know, and of course, because the trauma surgeons are the ones really dealing with a lot of these patients and helping nursing them back to health, I think they have a unique perspective on the entire gun violence issue that many of us simply don't have now. That being said, you know, as an ER physician, I've seen, of course, plenty of gun violence victims, and I can tell you that gun violence affects so many people outside of the patient, and that's something that's not really talked about enough of. You know, it's one thing to have someone pass away, but that person's loved ones are profoundly affected, family, sometimes mothers, kids are affected. So it just affects so many people. And I think that is kind of lost on the whole situation. So hopefully something will happen regarding gun violence. We'll do something to fix it, because obviously this can't continue in the current trajectory, especially here in America. Those outside of the country and doing things in other parts of the globe, gun violence is definitely a global issue, but in America, it's definitely a uniquely terrible issue due to the prevalence of weapons and, you know, people who are probably not stable enough to handle them. So let's hope this is something that will be addressed, and we'll find some way to kind of, I think, reduce some of the gun violence here in the United States. All right, guys, so the next topic we really want to discuss is that regarding the COVID vaccine. And there's been extensive research done on this vaccine now, and there's, like we talked about, the plenty of vaccines that are out there between the Moderna vaccine, the Pfizer, the Johnson & Johnson. All of them are found to be relatively safe and effective for reducing COVID severity and COVID hospitalizations. And due to those people who were vaccinated, as well as those who got the illness and recovered, It's believed that now COVID is officially endemic in our population, meaning that COVID now is in, has been in the milieu, if you will, of the people. And now there's enough immunity within the population to reduce, to prevent those massive spikes in death that we saw during the initial phases of the outbreak. So there've been studies after studies done on the various vaccines and how useful they are. Like, are they working? Are they efficacious? You know, people are looking at these vaccines because, of course, the vaccines have been a center of just constant drama and controversy. People are convinced they're poisonous. Some people are convinced they're the best thing ever. And it's been a lot of back and forth. And I think the vaccines definitely have a place. I don't think they're the end all be all. We definitely need more than just vaccines. And I think, you know, we could use vaccines and combine with a whole host of other measures to help reduce the severity of COVID and its effects on the population. So, but there was a recent report that came out regarding long COVID. Now, long COVID is considered chronic COVID symptoms that people can develop after the initial phase of COVID, which is actually quite prevalent. It's believed to affect a significant portion of COVID who are infected by COVID. And it was believed that the COVID vaccinations have actually reduced the risk of long COVID. And that was one of the issues that was being pushed early on during the initial period when the vaccines were being debuted. That being said, it's found that now that long COVID really isn't reduced that much with vaccination. And it's believed that those who actually got the actual COVID infection and recovered tend to have the best immunity over all patients, even more so than those who were vaccinated. But there was some benefit in the vaccination group. About 15% apparently felt there was a 15% reduction in the long COVID risk. While significant, not as significant as initially believed per the initial reports, which were much higher. That being said, you know, COVID breakthrough COVID infections, meaning infections on people who were previously vaccinated, is something that is fairly considered to be a mild illness, but can also still come with some risk of significant death and complications. So, you know, all that goes to just say that COVID is still something that we need to be vigilant about. We're going to talk about, though, how the overall COVID recommendations are being really relaxed globally. One of the biggest ones in that area would be the travel. Travel industry is one of the biggest affected industries due to the COVID vaccines. You know, we had airports essentially shut down all over the globe. Air industries essentially collapsed due to lack of people moving around and being allowed to move about. And so economically, COVID was fairly devastating on the global economy. For that reason, it's been really a push to get people back, you know, into their regular routine of activity that they were doing before COVID became a thing. Travel specifically is one of the biggest industries that were affected. And because of this, there's been a push currently to get almost all travel restrictions removed from the laws from different nations due to the significant, you know, effects on travel that were sustained due to the COVID vaccine and the whole COVID epidemic. Now, even some of the most restrictive countries like Israel and Canada, they pretty much lifted all their pre-departure COVID-19 testing for inbound passengers. You know, many countries require like a negative test within 3 days of arriving in the various country to even be allowed in. And, you know, because of this, it caused a lot of issues, people being held at airports and so forth. So now many countries are shutting that down because they realize that people are just refusing to travel anymore. And that's why, you know, the FaceTime and Zoom has been a big thing now, because people are just not wanting to go and actually physically go through all that. And as a result, people, many travel-based companies have lost a lot of money. So there's been a push by over 260 travel industry and business organizations calling for the end to pre-departure testing requirements for vaccinated travelers entering the U.S. So they want to say, if you've been vaccinated, you should be just kind of allowed to come and go as you please. No requirements of negative test results and all that. Because we know breakthrough COVID is a thing. But, you know, ultimately, people are scared still, despite vaccinations, to travel, because if they do get positive while they're in their destination, they may not be allowed back in the country. And that's something that only the U.S. is still doing at this point. So we're, you know, many people are pushing for that to be kind of removed so that people can travel back and forth as they please. A recent survey that was performed by a travel website known as The Points Guy, it actually did a survey talking to people, asking them about if they'll be more likely to travel if there was not a testing requirement to re-enter the country. And it was found that 53% of people would actually be more likely to travel. So people are literally not traveling because they're afraid of that testing requirement to get back into the country. So in essence, you can't blame people for. I mean, imagine going to another cool destination, you get there, somehow get sick, and now you have to stay there until you're healthy. And COVID can last 2-3 weeks. So imagine spending 2-3 weeks extra time somewhere you didn't plan on it, the cost and all that. So it can be definitely very difficult. So ultimately, these COVID testing requirements have hampered travel a lot, and there's a push now to get these travel restrictions relaxed so people can move about as they will. We'll see how those things move about. I mean, there's a lot of belief that it will happen and that we will see more relaxed requirements for everybody to hopefully improve, you know, the travel industry and their, you know, operations, because they've been significantly affected and many people are just, you know, struggling who are in the travel industry, and hopefully this will get that industry back to where it was before COVID. All right, guys, so I know we've been talking about COVID and, you know, that's kind of old hat as far as these virus concerns are, and I'm just joking, of course, but there's a new virus out here that's causing a lot of concern and discomfort amongst the populace, and that is monkeypox. Now, monkeypox is a virus, actually, funny enough, but it's something that is really hasn't been seen that often in Europe and in America where the current outbreaks are being identified. It's actually a virus that is actually more endemic to Central and West Africa, and it's been known to be associated with, it's called a zoonotic disease, meaning that it can be spread from animals to humans, and it can also be spread between people. Now, typically, monkeypox is something that is been believed to affect mostly primates, rodents, and different animals, and I guess humans can get around those animals. They can potentially get the virus from those sources. Now, it's believed that the current outbreak we're seeing is believed to have actually been developed between some homosexual males who are believed to have spread it to each other at a recent party event that occurred in Spain. So it was actually two raves held in Spain and Belgium. And this is where the WHO's appointees who did the investigation actually believe this is where the source of the current outbreak we're seeing in Europe and America originated. Now, obviously, it's believed that there was some close contact between some of the individuals at this event. And then from there, it spread to other people who were in contact with these individuals, and so on and so on. So they believe there have been over 90 cases of monkeypox currently in Britain, Spain, Israel, France, Switzerland, the US, and Australia. So definitely not COVID level numbers, but it is very odd because you don't see this too often in, you know, Western Europe and America, especially when endemically it's been in Africa, Central Africa, and Western Africa for many decades and documented, but you don't see that those cases typically in the areas you see them currently. So, you know, there's been a lot of concern doing this due to this rise in monkeypox, and even been talks of a vaccine, but I'm sure people aren't trying to be preemptively vaccinated against monkeypox unless you're truly at risk of close contact. But overall, monkeypox is one of those viruses as well that usually is associated with headache, chills, fever, and most people consider it a self-limiting disease, meaning after about a 2-3 week period, it usually goes away. Now, that being said, there is a risk of complications, including severe infections of the eyes, people who lost vision, people can die from it. Fairly low risk, I mean, low percentage of those, about 5%, can have those serious complications, but still, it's still something that, if preventable, would be ideal. Obviously, the best preventation is to stay away from people who are believed to be infected. Again, close contact is key in spreading this particular infection, so you want to be careful not to be rubbing up against someone who may have lesions or who may have symptoms suspicious that can be associated with this smallpox virus. So ultimately, smallpox is a thing. Monkeypox is a thing. And so you want to be careful as far as what's going on out here. Now, thankfully, the numbers in this are very low, but if we can kind of make sure you're careful who you're, you know, rubbing up on, sounds terrible, but you don't want to be close to someone who may be potentially infected with the monkeypox, and hopefully within a few weeks they'll be fine and then you can go back to doing what you were doing with said individual. Now, If you're someone who's been, you know, following the COVID restrictions, you probably will be good anyway. Because if you're staying 6 feet from people, chances of you getting monkeypox is very low as well. And really, darn near every other illness is pretty low if you're far away from people. So, moral of the story is, if you want to be healthy, stay away from people. But no, if you want to be healthy, just be careful, guys. And try not to, get close to people who are a little bit ill. Make sure you get people who are ill. Try to quarantine and stay, by yourself until the symptoms pass and you're able to get back to normal health. And I think we'll be fine. I just got to just be smart how we move about. And, we can definitely, I think, get through this without too much issues if people, do what they're supposed to do. All right, guys. So the next topic we want to discuss regards to the health benefits of coffee. Apparently, coffee was found to actually be associated with longer lifespans in a group of people who were studied in a research project that was conducted in the Southern Medical University in China. Now, what they looked at was a group of individuals who were just being monitored and just being kind of studied regarding their health choices, and they matched these people up in every way as far as age, health conditions, other overall health status, and they kind of only looked at whether or not they drank coffee or whether or not they did not, as far as how they separated the groups. Now, they had a total of 171,000 people that they looked at who had no signs of heart disease or cancer before the study began. Now, the average age of the people they looked at in this group was about 55.6 years old, and they looked at people from the year 2009 to 2018. And so what they looked at is people who drank coffee and who did not drink coffee in these groups, and whether or not they used sugar or whether or not they used artificial sweeteners or no sweetener at all. And essentially, those who did use sweetener just had 1 teaspoon of sugar on average in their coffee. And basically, what they found was that those who drank coffee were found to be less likely to die for any reason from cancer, from stroke, heart attack, all that. Less likely to die in a 7-year period. And those who drank unsweetened coffee were found to be at almost 21% less likely to die for any reason. And those who drank sweetened coffee were actually 31% less likely to die for any reason. Those who used sweeteners, however, it was less clear, meaning there was increased risk of death. So kind of interesting how they looked at these numbers and what they found. But the good news is that it pointed to that coffee was associated with decreased risk of cardiovascular disease, cancer, stroke, and all kinds of illnesses that we know increases people's risk of death. So there's been this belief that due to coffee's, health benefits, including strong antioxidants, it has some anti-cancer components. It's believed that coffee may have a protective effect in preventing some of these illnesses. And those illnesses that we know that their decreased risk for include stroke, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, colon cancer, liver cancer, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And so just a lot of different illnesses that we're seeing coffee may have some benefits in preventing those illnesses from getting worse or killing people that infect. So, and when they looked at these people who drank coffee, now these were moderate coffee drinkers, like about 1.5 to 3 cups per day. So it's not just someone who takes like a shot of espresso. I mean, these are people who drink a moderate amount of coffee. And they even pointed to the benefits of decaf, in case those people who don't like coffee, because it stimulates them too much, if they drank decaf and got some of the other things in the coffee outside of the caffeine, there were some health benefits associated with that as well. So I think it really is another boost to the coffee drinkers, including myself, who's a big coffee fan, that there are some benefits of coffee. Now, you definitely want to stay away from the super sweetened, milky variations. Even though the study did show some improvements in those who did put sugar in their coffee, keep in mind it was only a teaspoon of sugar, not, the large amounts you see in the fancy lattes and other, mixed drink contraptions you get at your fancy baristas. So just be cognizant of that, guys. Coffee can be definitely associated with a healthy lifestyle and can actually increase your lifespan, according to this study. So it's just something that you want to be cognizant of, that coffee is something that you should consider adding to your routine. All right, guys, and last but not least, let's talk about a topic that I like to discuss. I can choose one health topic that we can kind of go in on a little bit and kind of really expound. That's going to help, I think, improve your health and wellness. Ultimately, you know, there's so many things you can do, and there's, you know, no replacement for getting a personal physician, guys. So please, if you don't have a doctor's appointment, make that appointment today. If you're feeling that you haven't been seen in a while, you're feeling that you haven't been actually looked at closely, find a physician or health practitioner in your area. Get an appointment, get seen, because it's very important that we take our health seriously, guys. And, you know, I think it's critical that we, you know, look at all the things that are out there that are potentially harming us and try to avoid them. And of course, some of those things may be fun, so in that case, do it in moderation. But ultimately, health is wealth, so you want to make sure you look at your health and take hold of it, because when it gets out of hand, it's really hard to get a handle on. So let's talk about water. And I'm a fan of water. I drink water regularly, and it's something that I think doesn't really get enough shine, if you will. Now, water is so critical to our daily function. It's how our brain works. It's how our body works. It's 90% of our blood. I mean, literally, it's our body is really 60% of water, actually. So we're almost just critical. It's a critical component of our everyday existence. So the fact that it doesn't get enough attention is really concerning, because it's one of the biggest reasons why people have health issues. So water itself is just something that's so important, and it's really important to literally every cell in your body, and it's not even exaggerating. I just want to talk about some benefits briefly. First off, amount of water you should be drinking. Now, I'm someone that's, there's really no hardcore number that everyone needs to be following. The old adage of 8 glasses a day, I mean, that's kind of old, but it's better than nothing. So if you're drinking no water and you're under 8, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice. I'm of the belief that you should be drinking more water, like at least, in my opinion, again, 1.5 liters for people, 50 kilograms, or about 120 pounds, up to 180 pounds. Over 185 pounds, you're drinking about 2 to 2.5 liters a day. So you need to be drinking water to hydrate your body thoroughly and to make sure everything is working in the best possible way it can. And that only happens when you're properly hydrated. And we're going to the summer months now. Temperatures are breaking 100 degrees here in Texas, and I'm sure your part of the globe is probably warm as well. So you want to be, you know, very, you know, focused on getting that water consumption daily and making sure you're hydrating your body appropriately. So what are the benefits of water, and why should we be taking it in, right? Well, first and foremost, it is important because it delivers oxygen throughout the body. So if you're not, you wonder why your muscles sore and your brain is foggy and everything else, you're probably dehydrated. If you're dehydrated, your body can't function, the blood can't pump properly. You just said that blood is more than 90% water. So if you have low water levels, your blood's gonna be thicker than it needs to be. Your organs aren't gonna be getting those nutrients from the blood like they should be. And you're gonna be at a disadvantage. So you wanna hydrate, so make sure so your body's functioning the way it needs to function. Secondly, it's again important for skin and health beauty. So if you wanna have, you know, nice, tight skin, you know what I'm saying, that actually retracts and doesn't sag and stuff, you want to be hydrated. Your skin cannot, you know, look its best when you're dehydrated. And it's so important in clearing out, you know, those toxicities that develop in the cells, because of course, when you're dehydrated, you're more vulnerable to skin disorders, rashes, breakouts. You get premature wrinkling. All you ladies and men who are in these Botox facilities, and nothing wrong with Botox, but if you're dehydrated, getting Botox, you're kind of working against yourself. So hydrate to help improve your skin, the clarity, the overall healthiness of it. So, and skin is just one organ, but also your stomach, your GI tract. People who complain of belly pain, constipation, a lot of times it's from dehydration. I mean, if you're dehydrated, your bowels don't work properly, your stool gets hard, you get backed up, you feel like you get gassy, you just become a mess. You get more irritable, people start getting mad at you because you're annoying. So you don't want to be, you know, that person who's gassy and upset, and now your mood is affecting the people around you. So drink your water, regulate your overall bowels, and it'll help you have, you know, easier time in the toilet, and you're going to have a better digestive tract, and your body's going to thank you for it. You won't be gassy, burping, and passing gas in inappropriate times. So can't stress it enough. The digestive system almost depends on water to work properly. And if you're not drinking enough, you're going to really understand the realities later on, probably at a time you don't want it to be an issue. Now, another thing that's important about water, it literally flushes body waste. You know, you want to Water helps kind of flush system out from impurities. In addition to sweating, you know, when you urinate, it actually flushes out bacteria from your bladder, keeping you clean and reducing the risk of infection. So people don't drink enough water, tend to get a lot of bladder infections and this and that. So you want to hydrate to reduce those bad bacteria from sticking around in places they don't need to be. So obviously, you know, just to reduce the risk of this poor health, water is really important. And in addition to that, it also helps maintain blood pressure. You know, blood pressure is something that's affecting many people across the globe, especially, Black people and those in the Mediterranean. Blood pressure has been something that's plaguing a lot of people. And for that reason, it's believed that dehydration may be playing a role in those high blood pressures we're seeing in a lot of folks who are in especially hot environments. So hydration can be a good way in reducing those, you know, blood pressure issues and helping your body cope with those temperature issues. And, I just can't really stress how important it is to hydrate, especially, you know, if you're someone who has hypertension or pre-hypertension or you've suffered from hypertension. You want to make sure that your water, you know, intake is appropriate to help your body regulate electrolytes, which can help keep your blood pressure where it needs to be. So ultimately, water is critical in regulation of overall health and wellness, and blood pressure is just one of those areas. And the last thing I want to mention, which is something we all know already, especially if you're listening to this show regularly, and that is in weight loss. You know, people who drink water tend to lose weight because they tend to get, you know, full faster, and they tend to consume less sweetened juices and sodas. So if you're replacing every sweetened beverage you take, be it a soda, be it a latte, be it a milkshake or whatever, but it's simply water, you can lose an enormous amount of weight. And it can also help you reduce the amount of food you intake, which can also help you lose weight. So if you're drinking 1 to 2 cups of water per meal, I mean, that can actually be a great way to reduce your calorie intake and just overall lose weight. So just keep in mind that water is so important, and it's really critical for a normal functioning human being. So you want to drink water. Again, for those who are, again, I'll say 185 pounds below, at least 1.5 to 2 liters. Those who are above that 185, at least 2 liters to 2.5. So, you know, just want to get that appropriate amount of water intake in to ensure your body's functioning correctly. And of course, by the way, guys, those numbers do include, you know, water in beverages, coffee, things like that you're drinking. So make sure, you know, you're drinking enough, more water than anything else, and that'll make sure you get the best amount of water and the highest quality amount of water that you need. So again, that's it today for the Health and Wellness Connection show, guys. Thanks for listening to the show. We're going to be here regularly bringing you the health and wellness news that you need to hear. Reach out to me at drberryhealth @gmail.com. Also, guys, don't forget, we need support as well. Please hit the Cash App, because again, this show definitely requires a lot of effort, time, and money to push. So we're going to keep doing it, but we need you guys' support. You want us to be independent and bring you that health and wellness news without, you know, being bribed to tell you whatever the advertisers want me to tell you. I want to keep it independent. I want to focus on the people. So please, guys, if you want support, please hit the Cash App, and that is @DrBerryHealth. So again, thanks for support, guys. Reach out if you have any questions or any topics you want us to talk about. Let us know. We'll see if we can talk about it in a future episode. Again, thanks for joining us again for this episode, and hope to see you soon. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection podcast and radio show. For more information on ways to get healthy, please check us out. www.anchor.fm/HW Connection. Here you can re-listen to the show, check out older shows, and even further support the show by becoming a subscriber to the podcast. Please check us out today. Again, that's anchor.fm/HW Connection. And also, don't forget to follow Dr. Berry on Instagram @DrBerryMD. Until next time, stay healthy.